My name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kareth and Giroux, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or your understanding. Darren will read the preamble.
Thank you. Hey, I'm Darren. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Hope will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Hope. I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Kathleen will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Kathleen. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Kate.
Hi, I'm Kate. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 29th of 07. Atlantic Group is my new home group. Heidi J is my sponsor. First of all, I'd like to thank Joan for asking me to speak. This is a huge honor. I'm a little nervous. This is the most people I've ever spoken to in my life, not only at a meeting, sharing like my deepest, darkest secrets. The first thing I'd like to do is welcome the newcomer who's in the room. That's really a big step to be in here, especially if this is your first meeting, your first week, your first month. That was the hardest time for me, and you should be really proud of yourself. So I'll start, I guess, from the beginning, tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in a really great household, and when I first started telling my story, I would talk about how horrible my childhood was, and, you know, my parents fought, and, you know, my sister used to beat me up, and, like, all this stuff, and it was completely normal, like, everything that happened in my household, and I had a really great childhood, and I had everything that I needed, and I even had a lot of things that I wanted, and so the first time I had that, you know, I had arrived moment was on a vacation at, you know, this resort, one of those all-inclusive resorts. And I had been drunk before, had, you know, experiences with alcohol before, but this was the first time I had an unlimited supply of alcohol, like right there in front of me. And it was the first time that I felt, or it was the time that I had that I had arrived feeling with alcohol. And I just went with it, and it was when, it was like right away, those alcoholic tendencies came out. The first night, I lost my hotel room. I couldn't find it on the way home. So the next night, I left my shoes outside my door, and I was 15, by the way, and that night, I lost my keys. So I left the door open on my balcony, and I just climbed up. You know, and the thought of slowing down my drinking never crossed my mind. You know, the thought of not getting to that point where I lose my keys or can't find my way home never crossed my mind. It was, let's find a way to adjust so that I can keep drinking this way and keep feeling this altered state and this oblivion, you know, that was so amazing to me at that time. And drinking remained fun for a while. You know, it definitely stayed fun for a little while longer. And so for the next 2 years, you know, alcohol became something that I always was scheming to get. It was always in the back of my mind. I got sent to a boarding school. I grew up in Westchester, and I got sent to boarding school in Rhode Island, and I loved it there. I really didn't want to go, but I ended up loving it. And there was lots of like partying and alcohol and other substances that would go under, you know, the radar. And it was fun. It was my kind of place. You got to be sketchy and like cool and everything. You come home and tell everyone these stories. That boarding school was everything they heard of. And I always associated like drinking with like an alcoholic as being cool. Like that was my thing, you know. And it totally backfired, but anyway, as you can tell, I started using, you know, I drank and like partied here and there, and then when I was 17, I started using and abusing alcohol in a way that started to have repercussions in my life, and I started having glimpses and tastes of powerlessness and unmanageability in my life due to alcohol. And I was 17, and I didn't know what any of that meant, you know? And I graduated from high school, and my parents went to France for the summer, and we had an open house. So my house became the place to go, and it was crazy. And that was the summer that I got to really let loose and really experiment with alcohol the way that I wanted to. And it was the summer into college, and I was having the time of my life. But my friends started pointing out that I didn't drink the way that everybody else did. And my reaction was, you're right, I drink like an alcoholic, and that's what makes me flippin' awesome. You know, that's what I told them. I was like, I can drink anyone under the table and this, that, and the other. Like, I always had a justification. I made everything seem really great. And having that, you know, bad girl mentality was really cool. So when I went to college, everything just heightened. And, you know, I ended up coming home from school 19 years old. It was like all of that times a million. And my family had no idea who I was anymore. My friends had no idea who I was. I had lost a lot in my life. And I was completely broken. And so in 2 years, from the age of 17 to 19, I had managed to make myself into... I had managed to get myself into this state where all I wanted to do was kill myself, and I was too scared to pull the trigger. And that was how I felt the night that I got behind the wheel of my car and I crashed into a tree, because I was drinking and I had no legal things happen to me, and I had no physical things happen to me. I just was done, and it scared me enough, and I asked for help, and I went to rehab. And when I was there, I wasn't convinced. It's like I asked for help, I hit this bottom, and then I got there, and I was like, I don't know. And someone pointed out to me, did you ever think that it might not be normal for a 19-year-old to end up in rehab, let alone anyone to end up in rehab? And I was like, oh. All I could think about was not drinking at my wedding. All I could think about, you know, I didn't have a boyfriend, and that's all I could think about. But, you know, through this place that I went to, I got introduced to AA. And I just got a sponsor because I was told to. Just, you know, why not try it? And this woman saved my life. You know, this program saved my life. She told me to start reading step one, and I called her the next day, and I told her, okay, I did step one, two, three. I'm a little confused about four, so can you help me out on that? She told me to slow down, and, you know, that's how I live my whole life, at a million miles an hour, and AA has taught me how to kind of slow things down. And there have been times in this program where I've wanted to just, you know, slam on the brake and not do anything anymore, you know? The past 3 years have been amazing. They have been the most, the feelings I've had have been so great and positive, and I've felt some of the most negative feelings ever in my life in the past 3 years, because all I've done is feel. That's all I've done since I've gotten sober, and it is such a blessing, because I used for 2 years, and I've been sober longer than I actively used drugs and alcohol, which was really amazing. And the feelings that I have now, like, I didn't even feel before I started actively using. You know, the things that this program has helped me get in touch with in my life is amazing. Plus the fact that I get to grow up in it. You know, I came in when I was 19, and it doesn't matter what age you come in here. That's what I've been taught. You know, whether you're young or you're not. I don't want to use the OLD word because I get in trouble for that. it's like a struggle, but it's also a blessing all the time, and that's what I'm told. That's what I'm told. I say that a lot when I share. That's what I'm told, because I was told a lot when I came in, and that's all that I could go on. You know, when you're a newcomer and you come in here, all you can really do is trust what you're told. But if you really look around the room and you look and you see how many people are sitting here, and, you know, like when here at this group, they go around and we have the day counters raise their hands, or if you come to anniversary meeting next week, it's like how many people are putting days together, putting years together. It's amazing. And that's what I saw when I came in, that's what I noticed, and that's what I remember, is the we of the program for me is what keeps me here. And just remembering, you know, the gratitude that I have for just everything in my life today is because of this program. And when things are really bad, when I don't feel that I'm getting what I want out of life. It's because I know that I can actually obtain things now. And the things that I don't want, or the things that I want, or the things I'm upset about, I can only be upset about because I have this program. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone, but it's like, it's beyond my wildest dreams, and I've reached that point. And I'm just so blessed to have been able to speak tonight. So thank you very much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Adam.
Thank you. Boy, this is nerve-wracking to be up here. I've had 2 weeks to fret about this. This is worse than my bar mitzvah. I'm telling you, man, I'm either going to be committed after I speak or they're going to put me in the witness protection plan. I don't know what's going to happen. At any rate, my name's Adam. I'm an alcoholic. After boarding school in Switzerland, I came back and I started to get into trouble. I started to raid my parents' liquor cabinet. I went for joyrides in my parents' Mercedes. I got caught for a burglary. They shipped me off to other boarding schools. The first boarding school was a really high-end boarding school, and they wouldn't accept me because I didn't have the academic record. The second boarding school I went to, they admitted me, they kicked me out 2 weeks later for having dry goods in my room. The third one I went to was in Tucson, Arizona, which is not a hallmark of boarding schools. It's the last boarding school you go to on the end of the boarding school road. We partied, we had a good time. We used to go, they have what's called U-Totems there, which are like 7-Elevens. And we used to go behind the U-Totem and buy cases of beer and eat Doritos and tell stories. And it was a good time. And so there were many magical times before the bottom fell out in 93. Anyway, I went back to Portland, Oregon. I had gone to a private day school there, which was on a sprawling old farm. It was a wonderful place to be. It was filled with intellectual nerds who had like calculators on their belts and slide rules and, you know, a lot of nerds. And I came back to school there, got kicked out of there. My story is one of calamity and disaster. The misery really didn't start until 1993. I had psychosis from dry goods, and got sent. My friend took me to the hospital, and they strapped me down and shot me up with Thorazine. And I've earned my seat here because thus would begin a 17-year saga of multiple psychiatric wards, jail, one disaster after another. I've probably been in 13 psych wards in 10 years. Absolutely unbelievable. And after my first hospital, I ended up living in a park in a cardboard box. And after that, I got sent to jail for punching a guy in the nose. And I spent 2 weeks in the LA County Jail, totally psychotic, absolute living hell. I never thought I'd get out of there alive. I was petrified the whole time. I'll never forget when they opened the door to the jail, they let us out, and it was just a wonderful feeling of just unbelievable relief. And after that, I got lost. I ended up in Santa Monica, and I was totally besieged by the enemy, I mean by the committee. You know, I had the Rufus and the committee bother me night and day. And I tried everything. I had Zen, Indian shamans, monks, Tao, I Ching, quantum physics, fractals, Jung, Anthony Robbins, mythology, self-help books, The Road Less Traveled, The Power of Positive Thinking. I tried everything to get some kind of solace in my mind, some kind of good quiet serenity in my head, and it just was elusive. And after that, I went to a weekly hotel. I stayed at a weekly hotel, and there was a bar across the street that I used to go to. And they found me one afternoon, barely clothed, very delusional, very sick. And they took me to the hospital where they diagnosed me with delirium tremens. And then I fell into a coma. I was in a coma for 4 months. I didn't think I was going to live. I came out of that coma, and I actually went on another run. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm awfully stubborn. I mean, I could not put two and two together that alcohol could be equating to the problems I was having. I was blaming everything else but that. At any rate, after the coma, I went on another run, and I got hospitalized again. Then my family airlifted me to New York, and I went to a hospital in White Plains. And I spent 5 months there. And then I came to the city. I moved to Manhattan, the Upper West Side. I got involved in a program called Postgraduate, which AG Group sends people out to. And I watched the AA meetings come in every week. And there was this guy I noticed who seemed really together. And his name was Michael, and he became my sponsor. And thus would begin a wonderful relationship with what I can only call is a beautiful man who's been there for me the whole way, who went through the steps with me, who comforted me, who inspired me, who basically really gave me the kind of direction I needed. And I did my fourth step, and one of the problems I had with my fourth step is I wasn't completely honest, and it took me about a year or so to realize I needed to do another fourth step, which I still need to do, but now I'm ready to own up to some of the responsibilities that I didn't accept as part of my own problems. I blamed everything else and everybody else. At any rate, Michael has been a great source of strength to me. There's been wonderful people in these rooms that have guided me, and I love this room. And you know, I've been through a lot of changes in AA, and you know, I've been through terminal uniqueness where I thought I was worse off than everybody else, and I was unsalvageable, and you know, I was by far sicker than anybody. And my sponsor would always tell me, no, you're judging your insides with people's outsides. And, you know, just terminal unique problems. And at any rate, I want to say to the newcomer, you're in a good place. I know sometimes it seems like people are annoyingly happy. But they're very solid and genuine people. These people are not putting up a facade. They're here to help you, and we want you to feel welcome. You're the lifeblood of our program, and AA is a wonderful place, and you couldn't have picked a better place than AG. It's just a terrific, terrific place to be, and I'm very grateful to be here, and I want to wish the newcomer the best, and God bless.
Our main speaker tonight is Stephanie O.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Larchmont, New York group in Westchester County. And my sobriety date, listen to this, is June 22nd, 1983. I'd like to thank Jeff for asking me, and Max for arranging it. I feel like I have a broker out there. And all of you for being here tonight, and particularly the newcomers. I had no intention growing up of going to AA. Not in my plan at all. And but as luck would have it, and I might explain it or maybe not, I knew a lot about AA before I got here, but there's certain things that you can't really find out until you get in the meeting and be a member. For instance, I didn't know that bad was good in AA, and that badder was best of all. So I was pretending to look like a very good alcoholic, a sweet alcoholic, you know, who just happened on occasions to drink too much. The occasions being Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So. In any case, I didn't know that, you know. And if I had, I would have done things entirely differently because I know today that bad is good. And if you can say, I killed six nuns in a blackout, somebody's going to come up and say, that's great. Can you speak at our convention? You're just what we're looking for. So I got the wrong message. I don't have a third grade drinking story. I don't have a high school drinking story. I don't have a college drinking story. I don't have a graduate school drinking story. I don't even have a young married drinking story. And you'll notice how I worked all that in very nicely. But believe me, when I started, I made up for lost time. I kept my eye on the ball. And if you would leave me alone, I could get thoroughly falling down, passing out drunk twice in a day and three times on weekends. And believe me, people were leaving me alone. And I lived in a house where my husband was sober in AA. I had seven children. No wonder I drank. Some of them beat me to AA. All of them are sober. And my oldest grandchild has 8 months, and so. We're sort of the Trapp Family Singers of AA. One of the benefits for me, and I know I sound like I'm going to skip anything that was bad, but of the fourth step was, I had said to my sponsor, who, by the way, I have a sponsor, she's sitting here tonight, so I'm going to be fairly honest, and and she has a sponsor. But I said to this woman when she told me to do the fourth step, you know, should I start maybe a year before I got here? And she gave me that look sponsors are born with. And so I said, maybe 3 years, and then I'm going back. And she finally said, start from where you can remember. So I went back, you know, from before kindergarten. And the thing that I found out was that I did not drink in all that time, but I was selfish, self-centered, self-willed, self-important, self, just waiting to put the drink in my mouth. And as I said, I looked like, I realized this, someone who probably might have spilled a glass of sherry at the club and said, oh dear, maybe I should call AA. I was an anything drinker. I mean, particularly if it was yours. whatever was available. I loved beer because I thought it gave me an aura of sobriety for a longer time. Don't ask about my theories. Forget every theory I will explain to you tonight. So I just had no idea that I would start drinking. And I can remember the first night that it felt like, wow, that was great. And then I remember the night that I thought, or the morning really, I guess, you were drunk the night before. You had too much to drink. Well, you can be surprised once. You might be able to be surprised twice or three times. But 3,473 times, you cannot say, oh, heavens, I was drunk last night. How did that happen? Someone must have loaded my drink. Because of my background, because of the fact some of our children have more time than I do, I knew about AA. I knew where AA was. And I just dug in my heels and said, you know, I'm not going there. I'm smart enough. I'm intelligent. I read the book at night at 4 a.m. under the covers with a flashlight so nobody would see me, trying to pick up handy hints on how to get sober without going to AA. I did not want to admit, I did not want to give my husband the satisfaction. Like he never suspected, you know. So there I am drinking and dying and saying, you know. Now I didn't only drink. I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of. I used to say that I broke every principle I ever had. When I got a little bit more honest in the program, I realized that I didn't really have any principles. A principle is something that you follow, you know, religiously almost, since I'm standing on an altar here. And you do it, and maybe once on a rainy day you don't do that. Nothing. I had no principles. Anything that came up, looked interesting, looked like fun, looked like I could get away with it, which was a big thing in my life. Can I get away with this? Can I look like I don't have a problem with drinking? I would do. I had nothing. And I drank with a passion and ardor that's only known to the real alcoholic. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I kept thinking, I can remember saying to myself that with this idea of not having any principles, that when I woke up to that, it really, like, you know, it kind of hit me hard, but not enough. I think now, today, about the look in my children's eyes, and it was a look of, depending on the time of the day, a look of absolute, utter disgust at what their mother had become. And fear, because they really didn't know what I would do next. I might have been nice, or I might have been screaming and yelling. And a kind of sadness that this was what, you know, God had given them to live with. And I used to look at that and see that look in their eyes and say, tomorrow will be different. Tomorrow will be different. I lied, I cheated, I stole, I had no principles. I drank around people who were trying to stay sober in AA. And I'm not proud of that, because I would have told you that their sobriety meant a great deal to me, but not enough to keep me from drinking. And it was a painful, lonely, and eventually absolutely empty life. I felt like I was a shell, that there was nothing left in here. I was not without some resource. I had decided that I would ask God for help. I was sure he would be delighted to hear the news. And so my first prayer was, please, God, let me return to social drinking. And I wasted about 2 years on that prayer. And finally, I got a little more honest, and I decided that I would ask God to please let me get sober, but don't make me have to go to AA. Please, just let me not stop drinking without going to AA. And I wasted a couple of years on that prayer. And finally, I prayed that God would give me the courage to go to AA. And on June 21st, 1983, I was arrested for shoplifting. This did not look like the answer to prayer. It did not smell like the answer to prayer. It did not feel like the answer to prayer. And as I was being fingerprinted and photographed in the Pelham police station in Westchester County, my mind was going, I'll get an attorney, you know, and I will get away with this. This will go under the rug with a lot of other things that were much worse. But this looked bad because they were taking my fingerprints. And so I went home, and I was working on my plan on how am I going to get out of this and how am I going to cover this up. It was a complicated plan, but it looked pretty good. And well, it was complicated because I was prepared to sue the newspaper if there was an article. If the lawyer spoke to my husband, the judge in Larchmont, New York, mind you, and if any word got out, you know, I was working on this wonderful plan, and suddenly about 3 o'clock in the morning, I remembered my prayer, please, God, give me the courage to go to AA. And I got out of bed, and I knelt down next to the bed, and I said, please, God, let me use this. I know it's a miserable, stupid bottom, but it's what I got, you know, and I'm going to go with it if it's okay. So I got back into bed, and within 5 minutes, I was back to plan A. Now, I did not have to look up a telephone number. I did not have to call intergroup. I just had to roll over in bed and tap AA. who I said, I'm in a lot of trouble, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, this was not exactly news, and he said, you woke me up at 4 o'clock, he's looking at the clock, to tell me you're an alcoholic. Well, okay, oh, wake me up at 9 o'clock and we'll talk about it. So much for the hand of AA reaching out to help you. And I went to my first meeting on June 22nd, 1983, and through the grace of God and the help of this program and people like you and meetings like this, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. And I can't tell you how grateful I am, and I don't know that anybody can. I think the only way I can show my gratitude is to be an active member of a group, to walk the walk. And I'd like to tell you that after 27 years, I got it down pat. No problems, never have to take a 9th, 10th step, never have to make amends. You know, that, well, that's just not true. In fact, and I don't think anybody's surprised. I've noticed at times that a lot of people get nervous around their AA anniversary. And I've never had that problem, but I have been nervous this year. And I finally thought about the fact that I think it is because I am more and more conscious of the fact that I'm not perfect. I don't have it down pat. I still make mistakes. The only thing I have going for me is that nothing has been enough to destroy my gratitude for AA or for the fact that I am sober today. And I don't know that I ever do want to get perfect. I'd rather go through life on tiptoe, kind of enjoying the fact that I'm sober, enjoying the fact that I'm a member of a group. We go up to Bedford Prison, two other women in the Larchmont group and myself, and that experience of being there with these women who did, in some cases, did nothing worse than I did, but they got caught. When I think back, and when I was giving you the list of stuff I did, I do have what I consider to be the worst thing I did, and I forgot to mention it. The worst, most selfish, most arrogant, most self-centered thing I did was drive drunk on a regular basis and justify it. Look, oh, got home again, you know? Isn't that great? Isn't that awful is really the truth. I drove your kids. I drove my kids. And I was delighted when somebody called me up and said, oh, Stephanie, we've had a little too much to drink. Would you pick up the kids at the dance? Of course, no problem. Bombed out of my mind. And I think back and think how arrogant I was in doing that. I've had the privilege of being in the Pacific group in California and the Chicago group in Connecticut. And I talked at a group anniversary there one time. So Clancy and the Atlantic group are not new to me. And it was fun sitting here tonight and listening to all the clapping, which I think is just, you know, such a warm, wonderful feeling. I came in and I felt very much alone. I wanted so much to identify with everybody, and I was really giving it my best shot. But in truth, I think I was looking for a clone of me, you know, somebody that looked like me and had my education and maybe even my number of children, poor thing. The most amazing thing happened to me when I was at a year sober. I moved to Miami, Florida, and I went to my group one night, which was a fairly large group, and they had the practice of only one speaker on Saturday night. And the speaker stood up, and I immediately knew who owned the Harley-Davidson motorcycle in the back in the parking lot. This was a vision from hell for me. He had dyed blonde hair in a ponytail, a diamond earring. He had no shirt on, but he looked very well covered because he was hair from here to here and tattoos, dungarees, boots, and a helmet with a horns on it. And I thought, identify, don't compare, Stephanie. This is not going to be easy. And but you know that phrase in AA, and if you're new, you'll hear it a lot. Something happened that night. And I don't know why it was that night, because I had really been trying to identify as I was in meetings. But something happened, and nobody ever explains. But I realized that this man and I were exactly alike. On the surface, we were entirely different. But on the inside, he had the same fear and the same... hate, the same loneliness, the same feeling of unworthiness, the same guilt, the same remorse, the same... He did different things, but the guilt and the remorse was all there. And I realized that he and I on the inside were exactly alike, and our bottoms were really very different. We would never have met if we had not been in AA. I never would have done anything that he did. Mine was sneakier and more underhanded. But he had 14 years, and I had one. And boy, I wanted a bottom the way he had a bottom, and I wasn't sure that I had one. And I wanted that bottom that he had. And both of us had a way to get well. And the thing that that man gave me, as different as he was, and I discovered afterward, he was one of the most spiritual people I'd ever met in AA, and we got to be very close friends. But I realized that on the inside, we're all alike. And that because of that, nobody, regardless of what their background or where they came from, can help me. And that's really great, because I don't have to have somebody that has more time than I do. I just have to be willing to listen to the message that each one of us carries. One of the most important words for me was the we in the first step, and realizing that I didn't have to do this by myself. Drinking had been a very lonely, very painful thing. And I can't tell you how much I was grateful for the fact that we were doing this together and that I did have help. It was very hard, and I say this to the newcomers, to pick up that 200-pound phone. And the first time I did, this woman who I'm now sitting in meetings with 27 years later said to me, "Oh, I'm so glad you called. I needed to talk to somebody from AA," and I thought, I'm helping her, you know, when I was actually at my wit's end, because my sponsor had the nerve not to be answering the phone that day. And I had a problem. God only knows what it was. And I, you know, that feeling of us has grown over the years. I came to believe that something could happen to me, and I came to believe it because of people who sat in meetings. The people with a year, with 5 years, with 10 years, and I thought, you know, if those turkeys can make it, maybe I can too. And I learned not to call them turkeys, but and I'm so grateful for the fact that in my sobriety, I've had a chance to live in Florida, in North Carolina, in Michigan, and see AA. And you know, it was funny, when I first moved to Florida, I called up somebody back in New York and I said, they don't do it right here. Thank God I kept my mouth closed, because they just did it a little differently than the way we did it in the Mamaroneck group at that point. And I learned to enjoy the different flavors of being in different parts of the country, and seeing it work, even if I didn't, you know, I thought we might do it better in my group. I have today a way of living which... As I said, I fail, and it kind of surprises me. I thought I'd have it down pat. Well, I thought I'd have it down pat by the end of the first year, to tell you the truth, and that I would begin a lecture series or something, and nobody's asked me to do that. But it's amazing, you know. I can't tell you how much a part of my life this is. And it's funny, I was waxing quite dramatic the other night in an 11-step meeting about, or rather than a 10-step meeting, about how important it is that we carry this message to our families and how we should know that our families should know that we are sober and see it in our actions. And I went on and on and on. And then I said, and I live by myself because my husband died a few years ago, and I have been, I came back to New York after he died, and I've been living alone, which is a new experience. And I think it's a time when the sixth and seventh step, which I always said were the steps that you did in the dark when nobody was watching, now that's the way I have to live today. Nobody knows whether I've done the right thing. Nobody knows whether I've even done the dishes before I went to bed, which is not the biggest crime that ever happened. But anything that I do, you know, is I'm alone, and I find these steps such a comfort and such a reminder of what I'm supposed to be about, and such a gift when I fail. When I fail either because I have gossiped about somebody or not minded my own business or forgotten where I belong and what is important, that I have a way to handle it today, a way not to have those things pile up and grow on a exponential rate. Because one of the things that I never thought I would get rid of was the guilt. You know, it wore me down, and yet it wasn't enough. And I often think I've never gone back to the Pelham police station to thank them. They told me after 6 months they expunged my record. I haven't been arrested since, so I don't know whether that's true or not. So I try to practice the simple things in AA, the way Dr. Bob said. And am I going to remember what Dr. Bob said? What is it? Trust God, help others. Clean house and help others. Good Lord. It's a senior moment. And they're coming more and more. The ability to stand here and even say to people, you know, what I was like, and to admit, you know, that I'm not perfect today. I thought that would be the criteria on whether you liked me or not. You know, that if I was perfect, you might like me. And today, the ability to live this program on a daily basis has been the greatest gift in my life. I thought my life was over when I came to AA. I thought, and now what? No more fun. No nothing. And it's given me a way of life which has allowed me to do anything I want as long as I don't drink and it doesn't hurt someone else. I was privileged because of my age and because I lived in Westchester County to know both Bill and Lois Wilson. And that was a great gift. And even that was not enough to get me to stop drinking. I mean, I knew, you know, long before I got here, I had the privilege of being in their home and driving Lois after Bill had died. And that's all because I'm old and I lived in Westchester County. It's not because I have any special gifts except a driver's license. But I used to sit there and think how fortunate I was to know them. But the thing is, we are all fortunate to know what Bill and Bob have done with our lives. And when I think of two people, a sort of mediocre Wall Street broker and a doctor in Akron, Ohio. Have you ever been to Akron, Ohio? You know, it's not the... it's not the hospital world's highest point. And with little or no sobriety, gave us a program that has allowed us to live comfortably in our own skin. And what a gift that has been. Bill, in a talk that he gave, I think in 1964, said that Alcoholics Anonymous and the members of AA have been given three great graces, and a grace is an unearned gift. The first is recovery, and this is not a direct quote, but it's close enough, is recovery from a potentially fatal illness. And the second is a life experience that enables us to have someone else, help someone else get that same recovery. And the third grace is an ever-widening vision of God's love and an ever-widening vision of God's grace and love. I know today that you and I have had that first grace of recovery from a potentially fatal illness. And the second thing is the ability that we have because of our life experience to help someone else have that same recovery. And finally, my wish for you, my wish for me, is an ever-widening vision of God's reality and love. Thank you.